welcome to Lunchtime Classics on 90.5 FM WUOL. Broadcasting live from WUOL's performance studio on 4th Street in downtown Louisville. Now, here's your host, Alan Brandt.
Hello, welcome, thank you, and welcome to a live Lunchtime Classics. We do have an audience. Audience, I asked them to be sure to applaud before we started, and then they didn't, so I wanted to make sure that everyone outside knows that we have a full house today, and that's wonderful. And they're all in for a treat, as are you listening wherever you are right now. We're live in the performance studio at the WUL Studios, 619 South 4th Street in downtown Louisville. And although it's unusually warm for a mid-December day, it is very close to Christmas time, and so we'll have a lot of holiday selections for your enjoyment in the next hour. The artist that we will hear is harpist Lisa Spurlock, who comes from a family of musicians. She's won three national competitions, first place in the American Harp Society National Competition, the Grandjani Division, in 1999. Also third place in the American Harp Society National Competition in Intermediate II Division in 2001, and winner of the National Ann Adams Award auditions in 2002. She's performed numerous times with the Louisville Chorus and members of the Louisville Orchestra. She studied harp at IU at Bloomington, Indiana, and currently teaches harp and piano right here in Louisville. She is also responsible for this lovely CD, All I Want is a Harp for Christmas, many of which works she'll feature in today's Lunchtime Classics. Please welcome harpist Lisa Spurlock.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back here today at the WUOL studios, and I thank you all for coming and thank those who are listening today. It's been about a year since my last performance here. Last year I had featured a program of Christmas music that I had arranged for harp from the CD that Alan had mentioned. So being that it's December 13th, I would like to continue with that theme and play for you today more Christmas music. Several of the selections are from the CD, as well as quite a few others that have been arranged for harp by various other harpists. Also today, I would like to share with you a little bit of the history surrounding a lot of these carols that we often hear during Christmas time. Quite a few of them have a very interesting background, so I'd like to share those with you today. The first piece that I'm going to perform to you today is a well-known Christmas carol called Joy to the World. The history behind this piece actually has a bit of controversy concerning who the true composer is. It's quite fascinating. Many believe that the famous classical composer George Frideric Handel was responsible for composing Joy to the World. And if you look in most hymnals and printed sheet music, you'll see that Handel is actually credited as the composer of Joy to the World. But over the years, musicologists have discovered that the text was actually written by a man named Isaac Watts. And Watts had published a work in 1719 called The Psalms of David. And those psalms were based on, it was a translation of the psalms in the Old Testament. And there were five particular verses, specifically from Psalm 98, that he had translated that's now used for our text to Joy to the World. Then later in 1830, a man named Lowell Mason used that text that Watts had translated and set it to music, which is where we got Joy to the World. Now, Mason was known to be quite a great admirer of George Frideric Handel, and it's been documented that when Mason had finished completing the score to Joy to the World, he actually wrote the words from George Frideric Handel on the score as sort of a dedication to his favorite composer. So that perhaps explains how Handel got connected with being the author of Joy to the World. And others believe that there are certain passages from this carol that Mason had taken almost directly from Handel's famous work, The Messiah. But other musicologists have decided or done research on it and seem to have found that there's really no direct passage in any of Handel's works that are used in this piece. But regardless of who the composer is, this piece really is enjoyed by many all over the world, and it's really a Christmas favorite. So I'd like to begin with Joy to the World, arranged for harp by Suzanne MacDonald. Thank you. This next piece has quite an extensive history, dating all the way back to the 16th century. Its melody, in one of its many uses, is known today as the Christmas carol, What Child Is This? Now, the original name of this song is called Greensleeves. And the first record of this song being published was actually in 1580, when it appeared in a book by Richard Jones titled A New Northern Ditty of the Lady Greensleeves. Some have credited Henry VIII to composing this, although no one really is certain who the actual author is. But it has been noted that Henry's daughter, Queen Elizabeth I, danced to this, so perhaps he was the original author. And also, Shakespeare even makes reference to this piece a few times in his play, The Merry Wives of Windsor. In Act II of the play, he wrote, I would have shown his disposition, would have gone to the truth of his words, but they do no more adhere and keep place together than the 100th psalm to the tune of Greensleeves. So it's interesting that this song even made an appearance in Shakespeare. And in addition to that, and maybe a little even more interesting or odd, it's been noted that in the 16th century, musicians actually played this song, Greensleeves, at a slow, melancholy tempo as traitors marched to their execution site and were hung. So it's a very interesting story behind it. And there's actually a very detailed record of this in the Society of Antiquaries and other sources that states on April 30th, 1588, 5 men and 1 woman were executed to the tune of Greensleeves. So with a background of that nature, it's really hard to believe that this has come all this way to become a Christmas carol, as well as other hymns that Shakespeare had even mentioned when he said the 100th psalm to the tune of Greensleeves. So the melody of this piece first appeared as a Christmas carol actually in 1642. It was called The Old Year Now Away Has Fled. Then later in 1865, a man named William Dix published a poem called The Manger Throne, and it was 3 stanzas from that poem that were set to Greensleeves, thus creating What Child Is This?, which is the Christmas carol we know of today. So you can see, as I play it for you here, you can hear how the melody is sort of a somber ancient melody, and you can really see how it dates back to the 16th century. So this is What Child Is This?, also known as Greensleeves. Thank you. Thank you. This next piece is a song that has sort of become more associated with Christmas time than it truly is an actual Christmas piece itself. The name of this song is Toyland, and it's from the operetta Babes in Toyland that Victor Herbert composed in 1903. Now, Babes in Toyland included quite a few famous songs, such as Toyland, which you'll hear today, as well as March of the Toys and I Can't Do the Sum. And not a whole lot can be found on the original operetta, Babes in Toyland, because most of the attention that's focused on the history of that was given to the films that later were produced that were based on the original 1903 Babes in Toyland. But I can tell you that the original plot, focused around two children who had traveled to a magical place full of live toys called Toyland. And while they were there, the song Toyland appears in the operetta as all the magical toys sung a tribute to their own country, Toyland. So it's really a beautiful song. And the Reader's Digest Merry Christmas Songbook describes Toyland by saying that it casts a nostalgic, almost hypnotic spell with its swaying, innocent rhythm. So as you listen, you can kind of imagine that it's very childlike in nature and very magical. So this is my arrangement of Toyland from the 1903 play or operetta Babes in Toyland. Thank you. This next song I'd like to play for you is called We Three Kings of Orient Are. It's always been a favorite of mine since I was a child. This was really one of my favorite Christmas carols ever as I was growing up. And this song is about the story of the three wise men from the east that came to see the baby Jesus and bring him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. It was written by John Henry Hopkins, Jr. in 1857, which is much more recent than a lot of the other carols we'll hear today. However, it is still over 100 years old. But Hopkins at the time was an instructor of church music at the General Theological Seminary in New York City. He actually wrote We Three Kings as part of an elaborate Christmas pageant that he was preparing for the seminary, and he was in charge of writing both the script and the music for the pageant. So We Three Kings was just a section of that pageant that dealt with the three wise men coming to see Jesus. So the song was later published in 1863 under the title Three Kings of Orient, as it was part of a collection that Hopkins had written called Carols, Hymns, and Songs. It was also published again separately in a special illustrated version in 1867. It was known that Hopkins, as well as being a musician, also was an artist and would draw a lot of his own illustrations. So despite the original name of Three Kings of Orient, the song has now been called We Three Kings of Orient Are, and then sometimes it's just shortened to We Three Kings as well. So it's kind of, the title has sort of evolved over time. So this is my arrangement of We Three Kings by John Henry Hopkins, Jr.
Thank you.
Thank you. This next piece has a very interesting history behind it that actually includes the use of the harp. It's known today as the Christmas Carol Deck the Halls. And the original melody was believed to be from a song called Nos Galan from Wales in the 16th century. Now, story has it that a popular Welsh tradition at Christmas time was to play a game somewhat similar to musical chairs. A group of men would gather around in a circle with the harpist in the center. And the game would begin with the first gentleman making up his own lyrics to the first line of Deck the Halls. So he would say something like, "Deck the halls with boughs of holly." And then the harpist would play fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. That would be her job, to play that middle section in between. And then the next gentleman in the circle would have to make up his own lyrics, which had to be a continuation of or rhyme of the first gentleman's lyrics. So it would be something like, "Deck the halls with boughs of holly, 'tis the season to be jolly." A very difficult thing to do in a matter of seconds. So this game would continue around the circle, each time with the harpist playing fa-la-la-la-la-la-la in between, which gave each person time to think about what they were going to use as lyrics. Now, when someone couldn't think of lyrics or stumbled over what they were going to say, they were eliminated from the circle. And this went on until there was finally one man left who was the winner, and his prize was to kiss the harpist. So that's the story behind the tune of Deck the Halls. Now, the words that we know today were believed to be written in America, actually, in the 19th century. And I find it interesting that a line in the lyrics that we use today actually makes reference to a harp, and when it says, "Strike the harp and join the chorus." So I wonder if that has some sort of connection to the old Welsh game that they used to play. And also the part, there are no lyrics to the fa-la-la section because there were never lyrics sung to that. That was always what the harpist would play. So I'd like to play for you today a full version of Deck the Halls, not just the fa-la-la part. So this is Deck the Halls, an old Welsh carol arranged for harp by Suzanne MacDonald.
We'll just take a short break to say hello to our guest artist. This is WOL Louisville and Lunchtime Classics. We're live in the performance studio today downtown in Louisville, and we say hello to Lisa Spurlock. Hi.
Hello. How are you?
Very well and beautifully done.
Thank you.
Now, you've been on the scene for a long, long time, obviously, as a harpist. But no, actually, you're just pretty much starting your career. Although you have many students, one of whom is here today, Abigail St. Pierre, is the page turner and also one of your students.
Yes, absolutely. Please give her a round of applause. She's doing a great job. Thank you.
That's an art in itself, page turning. You got to know when to look for the head nod and the page to turn really quickly without doing two pages at once.
Right. Without making a lot of noise either. She's great at it.
But you have quite a few students here in the
Yes, region. I have 63 students, which keeps me pretty busy. It's 63 private lessons every week that I teach. A lot of them are piano students and quite a few harp students as well, ranging from ages 3 all the way up through adult. So it's quite a variety.
But you're not ignoring your own pursuits, too. I understand that you'll be competing in the future?
Yes. I'm planning on entering the highest division of the American Harp Society National Competition, which will be held in Chicago in June of 2007. So I'm currently preparing for that. They require 3 very difficult pieces for the harp, each about 10 minutes long. So it's quite a lot of work to get ready for that.
Well, I was reading the biography in your CD, and all of these arrangements are by you in All I Want is a Harp for Christmas by Lisa Spurlock. And it says that you began when you were 2 years old.
Yes, I started my musical training when I was 2. I didn't pick up the harp later until I was 8. But
was that the same time as potty training? Or
about,
during?
Yeah. I sort of learned the notes of the staff along with the alphabet. So I learned to read music as I learned to read.
That's amazing.
I began on violin and piano and then later picked up harp when I was 8 years old.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, the arrangements are lovely, and I know as trying to arrange for instruments myself, that is an art in itself. And not only do you have to know the music, you have to know the instrument, but you have to have taste as well, because if you do some things people don't necessarily like, then it's not a success. But you seem to do very tasteful arrangements. Do you enjoy doing that?
Yes, I really do enjoy that. Arranging for the harp, it is, like you'd mentioned, a difficult art form. When you think about it, a lot of these carols, or just any piece for that matter, is usually performed by a large group or an orchestra. And there's a piece later that I'll be performing from the Nutcracker Ballet, where you actually take all of the different parts of the orchestra and try to combine them into one instrument, which is quite a task. And it's a wonderful art form, though, and I just really enjoy doing that.
Mm-hmm. I know that nowadays, in modern times, the harp may be considered to be a woman's instrument. We don't see too many men playing harp. But I don't necessarily think that would historically be the case because it's such a huge monster.
Right. Actually, the historical harps, though, were smaller. So they were the easy ones to carry around. It was when more women started playing that they made them bigger. But there aren't too many men that play the harp. It is many more women. There are a few. When I was in school at Indiana University, there were probably, out of a class of maybe 25 or 30, there was probably about 2 or 3 men.
Mm-hmm. So. I think any boy who saw the Marx Brothers at one time at least wanted to, if they saw a grand piano, run in, rip out the strings, and start playing like Harpo did. But I guess the desire to do that is lost as they get older. But you have a great website, lisaspurlock.com, that I know you're renovating, but right now it looks good. And if more people want information... And can they get the CD?
Yes, I'm redoing the website right now, but it should be up and running, so you can order directly from the website in a couple weeks. So actually, you can order the CD directly now just by sending me an email.
Okay.
So we'll have a whole account set up in about a month.
All right, and that's lisaspurlock.com.
Yes.
Well, thank you for coming, and it's always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
Especially
it's a pleasure
to
be here.
Especially during this Christmas season, and I've talked enough. Let's have some more music.
Okay.
Lisa Spurlock.
To continue now in the performance with 2 songs from the Nutcracker Ballet. Most of you know, the Nutcracker is a Christmas ballet that was written by Tchaikovsky. And Tchaikovsky had originally composed the work based on E.T.A. Hoffman's story, The Nutcracker and the Mouse King. The first performance of this complete ballet took place in the Mariinsky Theater in St. Petersburg in 1892 and was a great success at the time, and to this day still continues to be performed all around the world at Christmas time, and you can just hardly imagine Christmas without it. So the first piece I'll play is an excerpt from the Waltz of the Flowers from the Nutcracker, which was a tribute by the flower attendants of the Sugar Plum Fairy in the actual ballet. And when composing this score, Tchaikovsky opened up the waltz with an elaborate cadenza for harp solo. And really, there's no better instrument, I think, than to write a flourishing cadenza than using a harp. And the excerpt I'll play includes the original harp cadenza from the Nutcracker score, as well as an introduction and an ending that's been adapted for harp solo. And that introduction and ending was taken from the main theme. So this is a short but beautiful excerpt of the Waltz of the Flowers from Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker Ballet. Thank you. This next selection is also from the Nutcracker. It's called The Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy. And it's safe to say that this is probably the most popular and well-known piece from the entire ballet. This piece was originally written for bass clarinet, pizzicato strings, and celeste, which is a piano-like instrument that Tchaikovsky had found in Paris and more or less smuggled into Russia before any other composer knew of it, so he could be the first to use it here in the Nutcracker Ballet. So the melody of this piece has a very captivating and mysterious sound to it, and a lot of that is due to the chromatic movement that takes place in the melody, which is constantly changing flats, naturals, and sharps. And because of this chromatic movement, it's very challenging of a piece to play on the harp as a harp solo. Like I had mentioned before, you try to take an entire orchestral score and reduce it down to one instrument. Makes it very difficult. And also because of the chromatic movement, this requires a lot of pedal changes. Now, there are 7 pedals across the bottom of the harp that run a metal rod up through the column and tighten and loosen each string. So every string has 3 different pitches as you move a pedal. And because this piece moves so much chromatically, it actually requires 117 pedal changes, which averages out to be about a pedal change per second. So to play this on the harp truly is a dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy with the amount of footwork that's involved. So this is my arrangement of the Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy from Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker Ballet. Thank you. Well, this next piece dates all the way back to 1991. This was written by my father, Daniel Spurlock. It's called Christmas Lullabies. And he wrote this with the intention of expressing we wrote this as two simple melodies with the intention of expressing the divine peace that surrounded the sleeping baby Jesus in the manger. The original score was written for harp, glockenspiel, violin, and ladies' chorus. And I have arranged it here for harp solo. So this is Christmas Lullabies by Daniel Spurlock.
Thank you.
This next piece is probably one of the most famous and most loved Christmas carols of all time. It's a German carol called Silent Night. And the text for Silent Night was originally from six stanzas that were written by a young priest named Joseph Moore, who is in charge of the village church in Oberdorf, Austria. Now, story has it on Christmas Eve, 1818, that the organ of the church village wasn't working. The most popular explanation for that was that a mouse had chewed through the bellows of the organ and destroyed it. So, although some stories say it was due to rust or recent flood, the mouse is the most well-known theory. So, Moore had taken the text that he had written to a man named Franz Gruber, who was a local musician and school teacher, and he asked him to set the text to music to be performed that night at the Christmas Eve service. So Gruber wrote the music for guitar and voice, and they performed Silent Night for the first time ever on Christmas Eve of 1818. Then it's also noted that later a man named Karl Maracher, who was an organ builder and repairman, had traveled to Oberdorf when he was there, traveled to Oberdorf and obtained a copy of Silent Night when he was there fixing the organ. So that's believed how the carol first began its way around the world and really made it outside of the local village. And now it's spread all over the world, and it's been translated into hundreds of languages. And it really continues to be one of the most well-known and most loved Christmas carols of all time. So this is Silent Night, arranged for harp by Suzanne MacDonald and Linda Wood Rollo. Thank you. next piece is an old English carol called God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen, dating all the way back to the 16th century. We've heard another one from that era as well. This carol was originally sung in England by the Waits, which were watchmen similar to town criers that performed duties such as caroling in the streets and singing seasonal songs. Although its history does go back a lot farther, the first official publication of this carol was in 1833, when a man named William Sandys included it in a collection called Christmas Carols Ancient and Modern. As for the title of the song, some references suggest that the term rest in Old English actually can be translated as keep, and the term merry meant mighty or strong. So it could be that the title would be interpreted as God keep you strong, gentlemen, instead of God rest ye merry, gentlemen. And there is a comma before the gentleman, separating it from the rest of the title, indicating that the gentlemen were being addressed as opposed to described as merry gentlemen or strong gentlemen. And this piece also appears in Charles Dickens's A Christmas Carol. It was sung in the streets until Ebenezer Scrooge scared away a singer of the carol by threatening to hit him with a ruler. So that it made an appearance in A Christmas Carol. This is my arrangement of God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen. Well, I'd like to close the program today with a special German carol. We call it O Tannenbaum, or it's also known as O Christmas Tree. There are many theories about the history of the Christmas tree and where it originated. It's believed that an old German tradition was to decorate their homes during the long winters with any plant that would remain green despite the weather, and it would sort of conquer winter by staying green. So they would decorate their homes with holly, ivy, and mistletoe, as well as the more popular boughs of evergreen trees. So that is where many people believe that the tradition of decorating with evergreen trees at Christmas time came about. So the Germans were also credited to bringing this tradition to America in the late 1700s and early 1800s through German immigrants. So with this in mind, it would make sense that such a famous German carol would be specifically about a Christmas tree, and even make references to its branches and how they would stay green year-round. A lot of the English translations have phrases such as, "How lovely are thine branches," and "Your branches green delightest. They're green when summer days are bright. They're green when winter snow is white." So I'd like to close with "O Christmas Tree," an old German carol.
Harpist Lisa Spurlock on Lunchtime Classics. Lisa, thank you so much. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. And to you too, Abigail. I'm Alan Brandt. Thank you for joining us. Remember, lisaspurlock.com and All I Want is a Harp for Christmas is available on CD. All of the carols and arrangements done by Lisa. Well, thank you for being here. Andy High is our engineer. Rita Sassy is our volunteer coordinator and tour guide. And Metro Television is here, Metro TV, on Insight Channel 25, Sundays at 8 p.m. I'm Alan Brandt. Thank you for coming. See you next time.